Welcome everybody once again to the Magic Table. And I feel like at the Magic Table, we tend to talk about like personal things, right? That's part of the Magic Table. It's this place where you can kind of talk about anything. So we have come here today around our Magic Table to talk about something that's happened to us recently and is very personal and something we think is important to talk about, right?
Yeah, that sounds like weird and vague.
Does it? Well, that's why you're going to explain what it is.
No, it's interesting because even driving home from work today, I was thinking like we've talked about racism and adoption and marriage and parenting and like that doesn't feel vulnerable. But talking about my health diagnosis feels much more vulnerable than maybe some of the other things we've talked about.
Well, and I think some of that other stuff we've had time to sort of process like for years, you know, these are things that we processed around the table, but your recent diagnosis is something we have not processed like publicly very often and then still maybe don't even have our own minds wrapped around it now.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think I was encouraged by another podcast that I listened to where a woman talked about a more serious diagnosis that she had received. And it just kind of got me thinking about like we don't often stop in the messy middle to talk about where we are. We like to be on the other side with things kind of wrapped up right in a bow. And I would say we are decidedly in the messy middle.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, here we are in our messy middle.
Yeah. We don't tell enough stories in the middle, right?
Right.
We want the, yeah, exactly. So do you want to kind of talk a little bit about
right, because now we're like a couple minutes in.
Yeah,
so right. In March of this year, after routine blood work, we found out that I have diabetes. And so we like literally the day after we did our blood work, I got the call from my doctor who had ordered the meds and said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. You misunderstood. You were supposed to fast before you did that blood work for 10 hours. And I said, "Well, I fasted for 12. I understand what fasting is." And she said, "Oh, goodness, you need to see your primary care doctor tomorrow." And so that's what I did. So I was diagnosed as a type 2 diabetic.
Right.
Started on medication. And really, at that point, the thought of going on daily medication
just like, seemed like too much.
It like wrecked me.
Yeah.
And I literally cried for weeks. But I think like those first couple of weeks were just really hard because I started checking my sugar often. Realized that my body was totally out of whack. The first medication I was started on didn't touch my sugar. And so I got started on a second medication because to follow up with a specialist is like 3 months.
It's just mind boggling. Yeah.
And so, So fast forward, taking a lot of medication, nothing's happening. And, something that I didn't know about diabetes until I was diagnosed is that, which of course you should know maybe, but like it impacts your whole body. And so there are all sorts of tests or like not tests, doctors that you have to have appointments with. And then you're immediately enrolled in education of how your lifestyle gets to change. And so, thankfully I was connected with a wonderful woman who, in our very first meeting said, "Now, when do you see an endocrinologist?" And I, you know, gave her the date and she said, "Well, there's this other type of diabetes called LADA, which is 1.5. And, you know, I'm not a doctor. I can't tell you about what you have. You'd actually have to have some more testing done, but, I think there's a possibility that you've been misdiagnosed." And while in that moment, I was thankful that she chose to give me that information, it just felt honestly like one more thing.
Yeah. And there was a lot. I mean, you'd already seen Like several doctors, like you'd been to the eye doctor, right? And there was the kidney thing stuff going on. And
yeah, so my body was having all sorts of issues because I had had uncontrolled blood sugar for who knows how long.
But again, I want to go back to you had no real symptoms whatsoever.
Correct.
Right? You had lost some weight, but we thought that was probably just kind of a diet exercise sort of thing. And it happened so slowly, like over a long period of time.
Yes. It didn't feel, they call it rapid weight loss is one of the diagnosis and criteria. And my weight loss hadn't been rapid.
Right. For sure. And so this was just, you went in for just routine blood work. We were trying to get it done.
Yeah. I thought I was adulting really well. And I was real proud of myself because I could like check the box like, hey, look at us. We did that adult thing and got our blood work done.
Right. Right. So you see the educator, she brings up this LADA, which is like basically adult onset type 1 diabetes, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then your appointment to get into the endocrinologist is like months away.
9 million years from that point. Right. And so she just said, maybe you should call and ask to be put on a cancel list. It's like, great plan. So I literally got off my Zoom call with her, called the office, and they could see me like that week.
Right. That Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so literally the endocrinologist walks in and says, I looked at your chart. Now that I'm laying eyes on you, I don't believe you're a type 2 diabetic. And began explaining in more detail to me what this could potentially mean. And it did mean more test. And there's a certain antibody test. And basically, if this were my diagnosis, spoiler alert, I do have the antibodies present, and like I am butchering all of this very medical terminology, but basically it's an autoimmune diagnosis and my pancreas has started attacking itself. And so my pancreas is no longer able to produce insulin.
Right.
And so like what is incredible just about the treatment that I've received, like, I mean, I feel like it's worth going back to, like, my doctor was actually out of town when I got the results. And so I got a call from her office where we have a friend who's also a physician there who happened to be working. So like I had a friend get to give me this terrible news.
Right. Initially.
Yes.
Yes.
Which if you have to receive terrible news, like from a friend is the way to go. Another beautiful thing is that like my parents were here visiting, which is why we were able to get the blood work in the first place. But that we had some support around that diagnosis and just, you know, I mean, it doesn't make it any easier to know that God was present with us. And at the same time, like there is beauty in seeing like God was in some of the really minute details of what was happening.
I think of that cancel list because literally you got in that week. I think this was March and you weren't scheduled till the 1st of June.
Correct.
So you would have been on all that medication, misdiagnosed for an extra 3 months and your blood sugar still would have been out of control the entire time had you not gone to the endocrinologist early and started on insulin.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, I think there's grace in that suggestion. There's also just like what we have learned about this diagnosis is self-advocacy is so important.
Yeah.
And it was one of the first places that I had to self-advocate.
Right.
So, gosh, these precious people in these appointments. The first time I met my endocrinologist, we were together for like 40, 45 minutes. I literally sobbed the whole time. Because, you know, as he's explaining, he's like, you know, this medication isn't working. And if you were type 2, your numbers should
be
dropping. Right. You know, and so I'm like, so what does this mean? And he was like, insulin, you're going on insulin. Again, I didn't know what that meant. And so we started, gosh, it feels like so long ago. And it's only been like 7 months, 6 months. So I started just with overnight insulin, just to get a long acting insulin.
Yeah. And let's talk about, before we go on to this epic journey, your relationship with needles.
It's not good. It wasn't good. Now I'm fine. I stick needles in my body a lot of times a day. But like, I'm like so needle-aphobic.
Like the flu shot gives you like the heebie-jeebies.
Yes. I'm like, I walk in to get my blood drawn and all my veins shrivel up. I used to tell phlebotomist that I would be a hard stick. And then when I was pregnant with one of our children, I don't remember which one, I told the person when I was doing the glucose test in pregnancy, and she said, you really shouldn't tell people that. It makes us nervous. So I stopped sharing that bit of information. But like, I can't watch, I can't take our children to get shots. I can't watch my own blood be drawn. Blythe had some stuff a couple of years ago. I almost fainted at Blythe's blood draw. She did great. I almost fainted. So like, needles are not my jam. So basically they tell me like, cool, you're going to start giving yourself shots. So because Curry loves me fiercely, his job became giving me my nightly injection.
It was awesome.
Right in the belly. That's very, it's very lovely. And so, yeah, started with that. And what they told me is, as your body tries to readjust to a normal sugar, you're going to feel terrible.
Oh, I even forgot about this part of the story. Jeez.
This is what I did on my drive home today. I thought about all of the details.
I totally blocked this part out.
Rightly so. So I was like, okay, I'm like a pretty strong lady. And like, I mean, my body's out of whack. How out of whack is it? What we learned is very really, really. And like, maybe we're laughing now because it keeps us from crying. It was terrible.
It was terrible. So you like didn't get out of bed for like
3 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, I did eventually.
Eventually, yeah. But it was like, at like lunchtime.
Yeah. I mean, like I was not a functional adult. Ironically, I still did work mostly. But I mean, I couldn't get out of bed. I was nauseous. I was dizzy. I felt like I had the flu. Curry would have to bring me food in bed because my sugar had crashed. And so I had to eat something, but also I had to like lay down to do it. It was really terrifying for our children because, you know, I'm glad to say I'm not usually in bed till 11 or 12 every day.
Yeah. Stop when you worked it. Overnights, everybody thought.
Well, I mean, that's a whole different thing. But just that, yeah, so already not feeling great. And then to try to regulate my body and having this major crash. And so then I think that's when we introduced mealtime insulin.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just trying to figure out. And they start you on all these baby doses, which is great. Because you're trying to figure all of this out, but you're also not regulating yet. And so you're, oh, so at that point, this is like more jumbled than usual, but when I made the move to mealtime insulin, I realized that I was going to have to be a big girl and start giving my own injections because like it is not practical to have Curry come to work. And sometimes I do 2 injections at work. So having Curry come to work, especially twice in one day to give me a shot, felt unrealistic.
It's a solid half hour each way, too.
Details. And so, yeah, I started giving my own shots. Also, I had to test my blood sugar 4 times
so,
a day.
I mean, that's the crazy part. You were giving yourself... And you still are giving yourself 4 shots a day, but, and then finger sticking yourself at minimum 4 times.
Yeah.
I would say probably upwards to like 6 or 8, like, you know, most days, just, you know, if you're going low or whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
Because the thing about blood sugar, and I don't know that most people know this, like having high blood sugar is definitely like long-term bad for your body. You should not live that way. It's very dangerous. But going low on your blood sugar actually has like really immediate effects, like you passing out. And when you're giving yourself insulin is lowering your blood sugar, thereby making it more likely that you will go low if you haven't balanced out your carb, you know, sugar ratio to your insulin, or, you know, I mean, there's so many factors that can affect it. It feels like voodoo sometimes, you know what I mean?
It is voodoo sometimes. And so we have just been on this crazy journey of feeling like every time we're steady, our feet have been knocked out from under us. There's been, you know, and it's all part of the journey. But that does not mean that it has not presented its own challenges. And so, over the summer, I did get a Dexcom, which is a little device that I also inject into my belly every 10 days. And it gives me updated blood sugar every 5 minutes. But that has come with its own trauma. Right. I've had two malfunction, and so both of those incidents kind of brought some challenges with them, and then made me pretty gun shy to want to inject this thing into my body again. There have definitely been, like, it was so traumatizing. I actually had to go into the office and have my next one, like, supervised installed because, you know, as my dad keeps saying, I got the special kind of diabetes because I'm so special. and also, like, having to go in and be supervised because they're like, that shouldn't have happened. Doesn't really feel great when you're at home administering this device yourself. And so there have just been these crazy learning curves in addition to completely changing how I eat and my need for more consistent exercise. And then, I dropped all this weight. Also, insulin makes you gain weight. And so not only is exercise important for my overall health, but I've never really been super conscientious about my weight. And it is just part of the education process is I am more prone now to gain weight. And so that's something that I will be coping with, you know, moving forward.
Well, and so with the Dexcom, I mean, back to that, waking up with a alarm sounding, I don't know, we probably a dozen times, maybe more, less?
Probably more.
More? 20 times?
Yeah.
And since you've had it, is a heck of a way to wake up.
Yeah, because it's like a blaring siren.
Which is good.
It means it's protecting me from passing out.
Right.
Which is thankful.
Nice. But scrambling around in the middle of the night trying to find a Coke and, you know, make sure your blood sugar's steady before we can go back to sleep is challenging for both of us. But I mean, you'll be up like several times some nights trying to get your blood sugar back.
I know. And you're so sweet because you're like it is totally challenging for me. And like sometimes it's so low, like I can't get out of bed, which is why I'm supposed to keep one on my bedside. But then you drink it and you forget to replace it till it's, you know, 3 a.m. later. And so sometimes if Curry hasn't woken up to the alarm, he wakes up to me hitting him saying, I need a Coke. Go get me a Coke.
It is good. I mean, God has prepared me for this because my spiritual gift is falling back asleep after something like that. So
it's true.
But I mean, so there's that. I mean, constantly worrying about going low, which is nice to have the Dexcom. But the Dexcom also instills a consistent anxiety into your life because you know what your blood sugar is all the time. Mm-hmm. You can check your blood sugar all the time, and it's a constant state of being on your mind. When you were doing finger sticks, I felt like, you know, there's a specific time that you check it. But with the Dexcom, it's like I always know, and like, you know, like, where am I at? Where, you know, you can always check. And so it becomes this like another source of anxiety, right?
For sure.
Just knowing in a weird way.
Yeah. Well, and the creepy thing is like you also have the app on your phone. So you can always check my blood sugar.
Right.
The probably scarier thing is that if I go to a, what do they call it? An urgent low.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a threshold that Curry gets an alarm.
On
his phone. Mm-hmm. The beauty of that is that's actually never happened when we've both been home. Right. It's only been when Curry is very, very far away from me.
And you have all three kids every time. I think you've had all three kids.
One, you were at church. You had the boys.
Oh, okay.
I had Blythe.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is this layer of, right, while we're walking through this and we're holding our own emotion, we also have the emotion of our kids that we're holding and we're trying to navigate. So, you know, the first time this urgent low happened, I couldn't get my sugar back up. So I'm doing all the things and I just keep going low. And so having the conversation with my kids of, if mommy falls asleep and you can't wake me up, you have to call 911, which is like, as a parent, not really a conversation you want to have with your kids. But there's even more basic things of like, our kids understand illness is, you know, you get sick, you go on medicine, and then you're okay. And so we were, I don't know, a month or 6 weeks in and talking about diabetes. And, you know, Bennett was like, so when does it go away? I was like, well, it doesn't go away. And he was like, yeah, but you're on medicine. And just realizing like, oh, maybe we didn't explain that fully, that, yeah, mommy is on medicine and she'll be on medicine for the rest of my life. And so, I mean, it, to say that this is upended life feels like the understatement of the world.
Yeah.
And we know at some point I will be stable. My doctor has said I probably won't feel stable until we're about a year into this. You know, we still hopefully at some point we'll be adding a pump to the mix, which we also know will be a disruptor again. Really, at this point, it'll probably be at the year mark. So, you know, just when we're like getting settled, let's like mess the whole thing up again.
Well, and then again, in addition to all that stuff, has been navigating insurance, which has been the biggest disaster ever, right? I mean, ever. It's just
so when I'm stable, I'm gonna become some sort of advocate or something because, you know, I referenced self-advocacy earlier, but I keep saying I'm educated. I understand insurance because of my job. Like,
you've worked in a hospital for 8 years. You were in a hospital
six, but I do insurance now.
Yeah.
And so like, I understand how insurance works. I understand self-advocacy, and this has been one of the most challenging things to navigate, just the bureaucracy of all of it. And I just keep thinking, I have a skill set that is conducive to this, and it's incredibly hard. What about all the people who don't possess this? How are they getting care? How are they affording all of this stuff that is needed? Because I mean, and my poor endocrinologist just really patiently listens to my rants about, like, I don't know how people are employed at a normal, with normal hours and who are navigating this. My schedule is such that I have one day off a week, and that thankfully we're out of that right now. But I mean, probably the first 3 to 4 months, Wednesdays were doctor appointment days. And so I would have one or a couple of appointments to kind of address all of this. And I'm like, what happens to people who would lose their job who don't have the kind of flexibility?
Well, not
that
to
I
mention
have.
The hours you've spent on the phone trying to
navigate all of this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So again, we're in the messy middle. And so I think part of it too is, right, if you're listening, whether you're walking through your own diagnosis or you know someone who has, like, how you come around people isn't, like, we wanted to kind of share a little bit about that. I think what has made this challenging is clearly this happened during COVID.
Oh, yeah. There's that other
that other piece.
Handful of life-altering things going on right now, right?
And so really to be like not in community the way that we typically would have and walked through this has definitely magnified the challenge of it. And so, yeah. I mean, I have thoughts about what's helpful to...
Yeah, no, I'd love to talk about just being in the messy middle. Like, what is it like being in the messy middle right now? Because I feel like, again, we have these narratives all the time when we tell stories of like the bow, right? We've wrapped it up and we're just like it looks this present right now looks like me having tried to wrap something for Christmas, right? Like there's tape everywhere, you know, it's not like we're in the yuck right now. So what's it like? I don't know, sort of being in the yuck.
Ugh.
I mean, besides yuck.
Yeah. I was not emotionally prepared. I haven't cried yet. No, that's fine. I mean, I think it's like twofold in that I think I'm like, oh, I'm stronger than I knew that I was. Mm. And I think there is beauty in that. And I also think there's an acknowledgement. It's really hard. I often talk to my clients about we don't like, you know, people will come to therapy and say like, but I feel guilty coming here to address this thing that feels minor. And we have this need, I think, to compare trauma to, you know, compare hard. And I think I have caught myself oftentimes of just saying like, well, it's not terminal,
right?
Or it's not, and listing all the things that it's not. And then hearing myself as a counselor saying to myself, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have value. I mean, the entirety of our life has changed, really. That, you know, my alarm sounds, all three of my kids immediately. Are you high? Are you low? What do you need? Like, I hate that my children's reality is they hear an alarm and they immediately respond. Is that incredible that our children are precious? Yes. Do I hate that they carry this burden? No. Yes. Will they be more empathetic humans? I sure hope so.
Yeah.
You can't cry.
I'm all right right now. But yeah, it's been precious. I think, yeah, that's cool to think about that. How have you like, I mean, I don't know how in depth you want to get to this, but like, how have you like coped with this?
Are we trying to get to, I'm seeing a therapist and I'm on meds?
I don't know if you want to go there or not, but like, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like everybody who go, or a lot of the stories you hear about people going through something like this, it's like, man, I'm a survivor and I just like picked myself up and I just did it. And like, you know, I'm superwoman, which you are superwoman, but there's a reality to like how hard all this stuff is that like, I don't think we talk about enough, especially in church settings where it is like, yeah, just get it together. Everything's fine. You
give
know?
It to Jesus.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm like, well, you know, my preference would be for Jesus to choose to heal me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I like, if you know me or you've actually listened to this podcast, you know that I cry and it's like a part of my life. But I just kept crying a lot, and then more. And so I went to my doctor and just said, I don't think that I'm doing okay. And I love my doctor so much. Because she just literally stood up and gave me a big hug and said, I'm so proud of you because this is really hard and I'm surprised we haven't had this conversation sooner. And just like having, it was not judgmental. It was just like, your whole life has changed. And she's been my doctor for like 13 years. She understands the depth of life. And just to say like, I do think you should talk to someone. I do think medication would be helpful. And it has been. It's been transformative for me. I mean, I think I'll be a better clinician because of this experience.
Yeah.
But I also think I understand other people's isolation who have dealt with chronic illness. It's something that I wish I didn't have to understand in this way. Yeah. And my empathy has grown for sure.
Yeah.
But I also think it's knowing like who you can talk to about it. And there are, and I remember early on just having a friend who said, we can talk about this as much as you want. And just how much I appreciated that, because there are people who do ask often how I am. And I appreciate that, because they're mostly places that I can say, you know, I'm doing okay today, or I'm not really well. Having that freedom of places has been really precious.
Yeah, that concept of like, you, we can talk about this as much as you want. Like, I feel like it's really easy when you're in a situation like this to feel like a burden to other people, you know what I mean? And like, feel like, gosh, all I do is like kind of talk about me or whatever, you know? And obviously, right, relationships should be reciprocal and stuff. But when somebody's in like a time of like going through something like really tough, you know, a specifically hard time, I think just giving people the freedom to like really process and then process. I think that's what I find myself doing. I keep processing the same thing over and over again. And I'm like, why do I keep processing this stuff over and over again? And you keep telling me that's what processing is. You know, I'm like, shouldn't I have like processed it? But like, it's the repetition even of the processing and space to process over and over again that like does the trick, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes you just get to the same conclusion, and sometimes the processing either gives you a new perspective or allows you to name a grief that you hadn't yet named. I mean, there is so much grief around a diagnosis like this. You know, the reality is I'm 38 and my body is failing me. And there has been a lot of just wrestling with, you know, you don't anticipate, I think, at my age to have my body do something like this. Right. And yet we know this is possible in any number of ways.
Well, especially autoimmune conditions with women, you know, I mean, it's
a thing.
It's very much so. Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think you get a diagnosis and you assume the grief that comes with it, but there are so many griefs. And some of them, you know, right away, and some continue to unfold.
Yeah. Like realizing you'll never really enjoy pizza again.
Ever.
Right.
It's just not the same if you have to like,
it's like grief on grief, you know,
give yourself a shot and then like wait 30 minutes and give yourself more insulin because your body hates carbs and fat and cheese. It's fine.
The combination of them is really what does you in, I think. But yes.
But I also think it's the people who have said like, where are you at? How are you doing? And they're the people who I know well enough that I can give a real answer to. And I think that has been what has sustained us.
We also, the friends that have like kind of like processed this stuff with us and stayed with us also are heroes, because now the Blanfords, we used to be very complicated to cook for. We are very, very like no gluten, no dairy, you know,
low carb.
Yeah, I mean, we are just like a mess, and not like it's different people. Like, you know, yeah, each can do different things. And yeah, it's
we're a whole new level of complicated.
Gosh, well, geez, like we needed more of that.
Yeah.
Right. I appreciate you just being willing to share some of that, because I know that's hard. And we've been through it, you know, in addition, like I said, in addition to all the other stuff just going on in general, you know, to like have a diagnosis in the middle of that is, it's a lot. So
it is a lot.
Yeah. So Do you want to talk about ways in which, like, you can support people, or, you know, that people have best supported you? Or do you feel like we, like, got to that as we sort of walked through there?
I mean, I feel like most of it is the space to process. And it's the, hey, I remember you said that you have, like, 3 appointments this week. When can I take the kids? Or, hey, we heard this week was nuts. Dinner will be delivered at 5:30. Or you and Curry probably could use a break. We'll take the kids for a couple hours.
Yeah.
I mean, and part of it is just even a text of, hey, I was thinking about you today.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I think, like, it's okay to be, like, messy. I think, this has been a lesson too. And, like, having both, we're both pretty self-sufficient people, right? Like, we can hold a lot of stuff, a lot of pain, you know, we're pretty good at just make, like, keep it on, I guess, you know, maybe pride ourselves on that, maybe a little too much. And this has been a real lesson in, like, accepting help and, like, seeking help when help is needed, you know, and, like, that's a hard lesson to learn when self-sufficiency is such a, you know, such a source of pride, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. What else did you have that you wanted to talk about?
I think that's all.
That's all?
Yeah.
Okay. So we covered all of diabetes and stuff.
As we do.
I think, I mean, I know there are other people have, like, dealt with chronic illness, you know, like, let's keep this conversation going. Like, some of the stuff that people have, like, experienced or, like, been through or whatever. I mean, we'd love to see how, hear how your community came around you, or, you know, like, find us on the interwebs and the socials, and we'd love to talk more about all of that stuff.
For sure.
Yeah. You got anything else?
That's all I got.
Well, we'll see you next time at the Magic Table.